Yeah, I got a couple of thank yous on that one. Here we go. So it has been a weird week for our family. You know, we're very much in the process of getting moved in. We spent the last 2 days down in Evansville buying a car, which was something that I felt was very wise to do because my wife really wanted a new car because I sold her car before we left. And she wanted something to drive when I'm taking the pickup somewhere and can't take the motorcycle. So we spent our last 2 days down there. We've spent a lot of time moving stuff into the house, or I guess putting stuff away in the house. But we've also gotten to spend some time hanging out with some of you. It has been awesome just the number of kids that my kids have been able to hang out with as they've been swimming in different pools around the city. They've been begging us already for a pool of our own, and I'm kind of sitting there going, why would we put in our own pool when there are so many people who have one that say we can come and use it? Like, that just doesn't seem wise. So thank you so much. I say all that to say thank you for the love that you've shown. I've had, I think, 3 or 4 different people offer to loan us their vehicles while we were looking for a vehicle. So thank you for that. We ended up, Doug was the first one, and so we jumped all over that, and we've had Doug's pickup sitting over there, and it's going to be a sad day when I have to give that pickup back because it's a little bit nicer than the one I drive. So if you want to swap, I am totally fine with that. I'm just throwing that. I will make that sacrifice and swap vehicles. But no, it has been great. There have been, over the past several months, like, I can't say how many different times where I've kind of had this internal struggle going on inside of me of, is this really what we're supposed to be doing? I mean, we were comfortable. I've shared that with you before. We were comfortable where we were, but there were these questions of, you know, I've been a youth pastor for 12 years. Now I'm stepping into a different role. Am I sure that that's really what God wanted us to do? And my whole life, like, I've wanted to live kind of out in the country a little bit and have a little bit of land and a decent-sized yard and all that kind of stuff. And we have that next door. But there were still those moments of, but, you know, I do really like having Dairy Queen within walking distance. And I really do like having the gas station within walking distance so we can go and get our Slurpees. And technically, Speedy Pete's is within walking distance, but we found out 2 days ago that that is like stretching the limit for my kids as far as walking distance down to Speedy Pete's. So, you know, we did that, we enjoyed it, but over the course of the past several months, as I've been having those internal struggles going on, you know, there have been a lot of the exciting, like, well, okay, God has confirmed in this way, and God has confirmed in this way. And I shared with you guys several months ago the peace that God had given Sarah and I about coming out here. And, you know, that it was actually Sarah who lived 3 blocks away from her parents, yet another area that we were really comfortable with. She was actually the first one who said, I don't know why, but I feel a peace that this is where we're supposed to go. But in the midst of those, I decided to take kind of a different approach than I would normally take. Normally, when I make a decision on something, like, there is no more second guessing. There is no more, like, if a thought comes in that's pushing against that decision that I've made, like, for myself, not a decision that I've made for others or anything like that, but a decision I've made for myself, like, I'm not going to second guess it. We, like I said, we bought a car yesterday. I'm not going to sit here and go, well, should we have done that? Should we have gotten something different? Should we have? No, it's over. It's done with. I'm not thinking about it anymore. But I decided to allow those thoughts to linger a little bit longer when I was, you know, kind of fighting those internal battles. And here's why. It's not because I wanted to just doubt myself or I wanted to doubt that God had said something to us. But it's because I wanted to take the time and I wanted to really understand, where are those thoughts coming from? Like, are those thoughts coming from an area of, okay, I need to prepare more for this part? Because there is a difference between being a youth pastor and being a lead pastor. The senior pastor that I worked with at Highland in Casper, he had just come out of being a middle school youth pastor when he stepped into that role. And he's had a lot of learning curves that he'll admit, like, I wasn't ready for that and I wasn't ready for this. This worked out really good. This did not work out really good. And so I got to learn some of those things from him. But I knew that there's differences. I also know that there's some things that are very much the same. Like, a lot of people have asked me over the years, well, don't you get more nervous when you talk to adults? Because, you know, they're deeper thinkers and they're more likely to come at you and correct you on things. I'm like, you don't understand. When you're working with students, like, there are plenty of things that they can correct you on. Sometimes it's the shoes you're wearing or the clothes you're wearing, but so many times it's the content that you brought to them. There isn't more pressure to speak to adults than there is to speak to students, because the mission is still the same, and it is every bit as important to speak to someone 18 and under than it is to speak to somebody 19 and over. But there are some differences in how you lead, and there are some differences in how you communicate and all those types of things. So, you know, I stopped and I would ask the question, is this one of those times? Or is this coming from a place of fear? You know, am I just sitting here going, well, but I've got it good here. It's comfortable. I know what I'm doing. Like, people trust me in this role of leading youth, and I've got to develop trust when I actually go somewhere else. You know, there are just so many different areas that I had to stop and I had to ask myself, where is this coming from? So you're going to, over time, as we get to know each other a little bit better, you're going to find out that I'm a pretty big Chiefs fan. And I'm a pretty big sports fan in general. And so I come from a family that is also some pretty big sports fans. That's where I got it from. And in that family of sports fans, we love to argue. We love to. So as a Chiefs fan, Patrick Mahomes just signed this big giant contract worth $500 million. And so far, I have not talked to a Chiefs fan who's actually really excited about that contract. But we are excited about having Mahomes around for 10 more years. But in the midst of all that, there is all of this discussion, even amongst in my family, but amongst Chiefs Kingdom, as far as whether or not that was a good idea. So I like to joke that in my family, we can win the Super Bowl and still have a couple of my brothers point out our flaws and point out the things that we could have done. I'm getting some like head nods over here. I like that. But still point out some things that, hey, we could have done this better. And I'm sitting here going, we just won the Super Bowl. Like, it doesn't matter what we could have done better. We won the Super Bowl. It's over. It's done with. But sometimes these discussions can actually get pretty heated. And it, especially when we get into basketball, and most of us are Portland Trailblazer fans, but a couple of us are Oklahoma City Thunder fans, and when those two sides just start clashing with each other, it can get ugly. Now, we have one Bronco fan in our family, but he's the kindest brother of us all. And so he just kind of sits there, and when the Broncos were winning Super Bowls, he didn't rub it in our faces. And when we were rubbing it in his face that the Chiefs won a Super Bowl, he just kind of sat there and said, just wait a couple years. And that's about the extent of it. In our nation right now, so, you know, I've had these internal struggles about coming here, and we have these struggles, these arguments with sports. In our nation, we have all sorts of arguments going on right now, do we not? Can anybody... Can you think of one argument that's going on in our nation right now? Raise your hand if you can think of an argument and you could actually explain a little bit about it. I think some of you just don't want to raise your hand, because I don't think it's very hard to come up with something that our nation is arguing about right now. And as we look at how our nation handles arguments, you know, there is not as much of that approach that I've taken as far as the internal struggles of listening and hearing where these arguments are coming from. There's not as much of that as we have in our family, where in my family, we argue over sports, and then 5 minutes later, we're totally fine, because ultimately, it doesn't really matter. But beyond that, we have a love and a care and a concern for one another that goes way beyond sports. But there is a new little catchphrase that has been thrown out over and over again recently called cancel culture. Has anybody heard that phrase, cancel culture? Yeah, it is. If you haven't heard it, essentially cancel culture is, if you disagree with me, or I should say if I disagree with you, then we're just done. Like, I'm gonna take you off of my feed. We're not gonna be friends anymore on social media, maybe not even friends anymore in real life. If you were getting ready to come and speak at an event that I was at and you said something that I didn't think you should have said, we're just going to cancel you from that event and we'll go find a new speaker. Cancel culture. Right now, if you get on TikTok or you get on Instagram or you get on Facebook or any of these different things, you see it over and over again, a post somewhere along the lines of, if you are going to a Trump rally, let me know so that I can take you off of my friends list. Or if you are voting for Biden, let me know because you are way too dumb for me to be friends with you. Or if you are a supporter of BLM, let me know because you are way too liberal for me to have any conversations with you. Or if you don't support BLM, you are too racist for us to ever have a conversation. And if we disagree on any of these things, and you can add more and more things to it, we can get into LGBTQ+, we can get into so many different areas right now where it's, if you don't agree with me, let me know. Not so we can have good discourse, but so that we can just be done with one another. And church, I want you to hear, if you are over the age of, we'll say 25, because I need to pull an age from somewhere. If you are over the age of 25, I want you to hear about that, because that is what your students, that is what your children, that is the culture that they're being raised in. They're being raised in this idea of, if you disagree with me, then I'm just going to cancel you. We don't need to have conversation anymore. Now, there's kind of this idea that, okay, we need to have open and we need to have honest dialogue with one another. Unless we disagree, in which case, let's not have any dialogue whatsoever. I mean, you can see how those don't go together whatsoever. But that's the culture that we're living in. And what scares me is that I've seen a lot of this seep into the church. I've seen a lot, I haven't been here, so one of the good things about getting to talk about this now in this church in Monroe City is that I haven't gotten to see this. So it's not like I'm standing up here and I'm saying, Monroe City First Church of God, we struggle with this. We need to fix this. We are messed up. Now, maybe we are, and I just haven't been here and I haven't seen it. I'm hoping we're not. Because what I've seen, with some board calls that I've been able to be a part of, and when I came out here and we visited several months ago, and then, you know, just staff meetings that I've been on Zoom calls with, what I've actually seen is a lot of unity. Not agreement on everything, and I'm okay with that. I've seen a lot of unity, and I've seen the board and I've seen the staff work through some disagreements in a very unified way. And it's been encouraging to see. That was one of the things that, as I was, talking to different individuals while we were out here several months ago, that was one of the things that really excited Sarah and I, was we saw unity in the church. And so I hope that it wasn't just one of those times where, churches put on their best face while they're courting a new pastor, and the pastor puts on his or her best face while they're courting a new church, and then the two get married, and all of a sudden they're like, okay, now let me show you who I really am. So I'm hoping it's not something like that. I don't think it's something like that. But I don't want it to become something like that either. I told you last week that we were going to start some discussions on what it kind of means, what commitments we're making when we say that we are church members. You know, the going to church is actually a phrase that you won't hear out of my mouth very often. It'll seep out sometimes because, I've used it for a lot of years, and I'm kind of trying to get that vernacular out of my vocabulary, because I don't think we go to church. I think we come together to a church gathering like this. But then I very much believe, and I know it's one of those little catchphrases, I very much believe that we are the church. And so that's got to be as we leave here. And as I've been thinking and praying about where we're going to go for the next several weeks, that's really where God, I believe, kept calling me back to, is we need to talk about what it means to be the church. Not just to go to church, but what it means to be the church. And one of those things that I believe it means to be the church is that I will seek unity. Jesus actually prayed for that for us. In John, we see these words in John chapter 17, verses 20 through 23. And this has been on my heart so much as we've been experiencing all of this lovely COVID stuff where churches are trying to decide, are we going to come back? Are we not going to come back? If we come back, are we going to social distance? Are we going to mark off pews? Are we going to wear masks? Are we going to make sure that we wipe everything down? You know, different churches are doing different things. The church we came from, you know, there's three services, so in between services, every surface has to be wiped down. And then, you know, there's just so many different things going on. Here, there's different things that have been done. There's different things that are happening now. And you look across the nation, and you just see churches bickering over this stuff. You see churches arguing over what it is that they're supposed to do and how we're supposed to come back from this. You've seen one church tell the church down the street that if you do that, you obviously don't love people. If you open up your doors, you don't love people because you're putting them at risk. If you don't open up your doors, you don't love people because you're not giving them a place to gather. And we've seen the church fracture a little bit over COVID-19. And I think Satan absolutely loves that. He absolutely loves it every time we have an argument over COVID-19. But in John chapter 13, in verse 34, oh, sorry, that is the wrong one. My page flipped. John chapter 17, in verse 20, Jesus is praying. He says, I am praying not only for these disciples, but also for all who will ever believe in me through their message. I pray that they will all be one, just as you and I are one, as you are in me, Father, and I am in you. And may they be in us so that the world will believe that you sent me. I have given them the glory you gave me so they may be one, as we are one. I am in them, and you are in me. May they experience such perfect unity that the world will know that you sent me and that you love them as much as you love me. Church, Jesus prayed for all of us that we would be one, that we would be united. Abraham Lincoln once gave a speech, and I should have written down the year. I told you last week, I forget years. Like, as soon as I read them, I forget what year things happen. I do remember what year I was married, and I believe that's in one of the most important ones that I can remember. But Abraham Lincoln once gave a speech that we refer to often as the House Divided speech. Some of you are shaking your heads like, yes, you know this speech. He was actually told beforehand not to give this speech. In this speech, he says that a house divided cannot stand. And he was told, don't give this speech, because what he's talking about with that is the fight that was going on over slavery at the time. That was a big part of his message that he was giving. But he said that he wanted to use some words from Jesus because he knew them to be universally true, and he knew them to be words that people would universally know. This is what he said about his speech as one of his own friends was telling him not to give it. He says, the proposition is indisputably true that a house divided cannot stand, and I will deliver it as written. I want to use some universally known figure expressed in simple language as universally known that it may strike home to the minds of men in order to rouse them to the peril of the times. I wanted to use something that is indisputably true, universally known, even if people aren't going to like to hear it. And so he gave this entire speech that hinged on those words, that a house divided cannot stand. Jesus said those same words in Mark chapter 3, in verses 24-25. He says, a kingdom divided by civil war will collapse. Similarly, a family splintered by feuding will fall apart. Church, right now we've come through, or we're coming through, I should say, a very difficult time in our country and a difficult time in the church at large. And it started because of a virus, but it goes back to before a virus. You know, we've seen it manifest itself, some division. We've seen some conflict manifest itself because of COVID. But really, if we're being honest, in the church, we've seen division and conflict manifest itself in dangerous ways before this virus ever came around. I don't know the history necessarily of this particular church body, but countless numbers of churches have split over what style of music a church was going to sing. You know, if you just want to sing all those new songs, then you're giving away all the doctrine and all the meaning of the songs. Well, if you just want to sing those old songs, you don't care about the young people who aren't going to come to a church if you're singing those old songs. And we make these universal statements that are absolutes, and they divide a church. And we've seen churches split one after another over a style of music. The Church of God that we are a part of has actually seen a split in the movement over whether or not you should wear a necktie to church. I mean, let that sink in for just a second. Like, I'm looking around right now, and I'm not seeing any neckties. So it's pretty obvious which side of the spectrum we fell on. You can probably guess which side of the spectrum I would have fallen on. But the sad part about it, though, is there was a split over whether or not to wear a necktie to church. The fulcrum of it, the focus, the place where it really came down was in Guthrie, Oklahoma, not too far from where I got my undergrad youth ministry degree. I learned about it while I was at MacU, that the Church of God has actually split over neckties. Churches have split over the style of the preaching. Churches have split over so many different, over the canceling of Sunday schools, over pews versus chairs. You name it, churches have probably had an argument about it. But shouldn't we, as the church, be able to set a different example than the example that we're learning if we look out into culture? You know, Jesus' prayer is that we would be united. Jesus' prayer was that we would be one. And unfortunately, many times, culture doesn't look at the church and see people who are one. It doesn't look at the church and see people who are united. It looks at the church and it sees people who say, well, if we don't do this, then I'm going to go find that church down the street. I'm only here if you do this thing that I want. Well, I don't agree on that. Now, are there some big, big things that we need to have some serious discussions on? Absolutely. But our first instinct can't be, I'm going to leave the church if I don't like what's going on. You know, right now we're in this great stage called a honeymoon stage, where I've been here all of 2 weeks, and so far I haven't received any emails or phone calls of upsetting anybody, and that's great. That's actually a record for me on number of weeks that I've spoken and not gotten a complaint of some kind or another. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. But I know that the day is going to come where I'm going to say something that's going to upset somebody. And some of those things that I'm going to say, you needed to hear. And some of those things that I'm going to say, I'm going to make a mistake on. But I've got to ask myself, am I going to be willing to listen to you when you reach out to me and say that, hey, this did not sit right with me? And then you need to ask yourself, are you going to be willing to reach out to me, or are you just going to say, that pastor, man, why did we ever bring him in here in the first place? We're going to have to make that decision, and I want us to make that decision right now. That when that happens, and believe it or not, some of you are going to say things that are going to upset me, and I'm going to have to make the same decision that I'm asking you to make, and you're going to have to make the same one that I'm going to make. Are we going to seek to be united and seek to be one, or are we going to cancel each other when we get to that point? The person sitting in the pew next to you or three rows behind you, are you going to cancel them when you disagree with them? You know, I know Mark and Rick are really good buddies, but I imagine you've had an argument or two, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. They're both, if they have, they're not willing to admit it right now. Apparently they don't want to air that out in front of everybody, and kudos to you. But there's a good chance that there's going to be a day where you're going to disagree on something, and you're going to have to decide, are we going to remain good buddies? Are we going to work through this? I want us to look, and we're gonna roll through this fairly quickly this morning, but I want us to look in Acts chapter 15. If you want to open up your Bibles, we're going to hang out there for the rest of the morning. Because I want us to look at the example that the early church set for us on how to handle this when we're having a major disagreement. Now, there are different kinds of disagreements and different kind of conflicts. Many times in the church, when we talk about how do you handle conflict, we go to Matthew chapter 18. And we go to that passage where Jesus is telling us that if you have an issue with someone, you go to the person first. That's not the kind of conflict we're talking about this morning. This morning, we're going to talk about the church conflict and how we handle the church disagreement. In Acts chapter 15, we're actually getting to a point where obviously Jesus has died, he has risen, he has sent his Holy Spirit, Pentecost has happened. The early disciples, the apostles, the early church is going out and they're doing amazing things. Paul and Barnabas have gone on a missionary journey and they've gone around to different cities and people are choosing to follow Jesus left and right. Gentiles, Jews, they're choosing to follow Jesus left and right. But as they get to some of these cities that are a little bit closer to the core, the hub, what would be our Anderson, Indiana, as they're getting closer to the hub of Christianity, the way, they're finding that as they talk to people and as they explain to people and as people decide to follow Jesus, that there are some who have followed God for years that are coming along and they're throwing some wrenches into the plan because they're telling people that, yes, you can follow Jesus, but you need to do all of these things in order to really follow him. And this really all comes to a head when they get to a place called Antioch. And in Antioch, there's believers, I mean, it's like they're coming out of the woodworks. People choosing to follow Christ. And then it says that some Jews, some Pharisees, came along, and they began to tell these people of Antioch, these Gentiles of Antioch, they began to tell them, you can only follow Jesus, you can only be a part of this movement, if you get circumcised. Now, I mean, first off, we look at that now and we're like, wait, what? What? I mean, just from a guy's standpoint, if you're a full-grown man and somebody tells you that in order to follow Jesus, you need to be circumcised, I'm like, honey, you have a good time at church. I'm going to wait out here in the car. For those of you who are a little younger and you're not sure what circumcision might be, you can talk to your parents later. That's what I've told students for many, many years. We're not going to get into that right now. But the symbolism of circumcision goes all the way back to Abraham, all the way back to the father of the faith, the father of the Israelite people, when God had told him to circumcise himself and all of the men in order to have a symbol of their commitment to following him. And so it was a law that you had to follow to be a Jewish male, to follow God, to be one of his people. You had to be circumcised. On top of that, there were 613 other laws that you had to follow. In order to be a good, God-fearing, God-following individual, you had to do your absolute best to follow these 613 laws, and in the event that you failed, there was another law in order to help you make up for breaking that first law. And so it was this big cycle of following laws. But the big one that they were really pushing was circumcision. And now, again, you can imagine, for those of you who know what circumcision is, you can imagine that if you are a male and you have decided that you are going to follow the way, and then you're told that this is what I have to do, you're like, you know what, never mind, peace out. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to follow one of these many other gods that I have an option to follow. I wasn't really convinced on this God, this Jesus guy yet anyway, so yeah, I'm out. And so there was this struggle going on, and Paul and Barnabas go back to Jerusalem, to the hub, and they're like, this is not okay. This is not what we need to be teaching people. And so in Acts chapter 15, we see the early church come together at a thing that we call the Jerusalem Council. In Acts chapter 15, verse 6, it says, the apostles and elders met together to resolve this issue that I just explained to you. They came together to resolve this issue, and at the meeting, after a long discussion. And we're going to stop right there. I think in the version that we have on the screens, it says, after much debate, meaning there was disagreement going on in the early church. We so often, I think we like to think of the early church as just everybody just getting along and having that kumbaya moment, which is a phrase that we used to use back when I was in school in the late 90s and early 2000s. But having this, you know, we're all going to gather around and we're going to hold hands and we're all going to be in complete agreement. Like, that's what we like to picture the early church. But really, they had a lot of disagreements. And they had to figure out a way to get through those disagreements. And we see the evidence right there. And so after they have this debate, Peter gets up. And Peter begins to talk to them about what he thinks and what he feels like God has been telling him. What we don't see as we're reading through this Acts chapter 15 portion anyway, or at least what I don't see in my version and the multiple other versions I looked at, is anyone saying, hey, look, God said this, and so boom, you've got to listen to me over everybody else. We don't see somebody pull the God card. Because, let's face it, as soon as somebody pulls the God card, is there really any point in continuing the conversation? Either they're right, and you just need to stop, or they're wrong, and they're not going to listen. They didn't pull the God card. Instead, in verse 12, it said, everyone listened. And actually, in this version, it says, everyone listened quietly, as Barnabas and Paul told about the miraculous signs and wonders that God had done. So Peter gets up and Peter shares. And then it says people continue to listen to what Paul and Barnabas have to share. If we want to be unified, church, we have to learn to listen. Something that we are not taught to do. I mean, yes, we're told to do it, but we're not taught to listen. And when we listen, it means we actually listen with the intent of hearing. And we listen with the intent of understanding. We don't listen just so you can get done so that I can give you my argument back. You know, it's kind of like that internal struggle that I was having, that I decided I'm going to listen and see, where is this thought coming from? Is this coming from fear? Is this coming from doubt? Is it coming from God? Is it, you know, where is this coming from? As we as a church move through things, the truth is everyone in here, while some of you and many of you may have grown up in this area, you still come from a different place. Your home was not the exact same as the home of the person you're talking to. You know, we like to use the phrase to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes, and that's a great phrase to use, but I came across somebody talking about this recently, that really, we can't fully do that. I can't fully walk in your shoes because I don't have the same experiences that you've had. But what I can do is I can actually listen to where you are coming from and why you feel the way that you feel. And I think if our nation would stop and do that, it would be pretty incredible the kind of healing that we can actually find in some of the things that we're going through right now. But instead, it's so often we're just yelling at one another and we're not stopping to listen. Church, we cannot be the same way in the church as culture is outside the church. So they stopped and they listened. And then in verse 19, James is speaking at this point, James, the brother of Jesus, says, "My judgment is that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God." Again, he doesn't stand up and say, "Look, this is what God says." No, he says, "My judgment, my interpretation, I do believe that I'm hearing from God. I don't believe that I'm making this up, but I am admitting by using the words my judgment that I am human and therefore we can continue to have a conversation. My judgment is this." Now, there's a lot in Acts chapter 15 to unload from many, many different angles. This morning, we're just looking at how we can handle disagreement within the church. You can look in the, you know, I don't know how many times I've read through Acts 15, and I've had that thought of, how in the world did they come up with the three or four things that they actually were going to require the Gentiles to do? And then, I'll read this, or I'll find this bit of information about it. I was like, okay, that makes sense. And, you know, there's so much there. But if we can remember to do those things, if we can remember to listen and actually hear, if we can remember to stop just pulling the God card to win our arguments, if we can remember that we're not supposed to just cancel one another out when we disagree with each other, then I think that prayer that Jesus gave, that we would be one, that we would be unified, is a prayer that we can look at and we can say that can be answered through Monroe City First Church of God. And the people of this local body of the church can actually go out and we can show the world how to handle disagreement, how to handle these things. And it's not by screaming at one another. It's not by canceling one another. It's by stopping and listening, praying for unity. You know, I mentioned last week that it sounds so simple, but the answer is Jesus. Well, Jesus is the one that gives us the power to do this. And we do it by loving one another. You're going to hear me many times bring up the command that Jesus gave when he said, "A new command I give you, and that is that you would love one another." You would love each other as you love yourself. Now, I don't think that by doing this, we're going to have a church body that always comes together and always agrees on everything. We could easily have something with COVID fall apart once again, and things begin to get shut down again, and we as a church have to decide what we're going to do, and there are going to be people on this side of the aisle, and there are going to be people on this side of the aisle, and they're going to have to figure out how we can disagree on this, but yet still remain united for the mission that God has given us to do. Not just cancel each other out, not just go find another church that'll do what I want, but that will actually come together and fight for the mission that matters more than any other mission. We are church members. I am a church member. And because I am a church member, I will seek unity within the church. And I would ask that that would be the same commitment that you would make, that you would seek unity within the church. Now, we can have a lot of discussions on what it means to seek unity. We can have a lot of discussions on what it means to, you know, to handle conflict. We're going to have that discussion more than just today. This isn't the last time we're going to talk about this. If for no other reason, then hopefully there are new faces in here at some point, and we need to have that discussion with new faces as they come in. But as new faces come in, and I'm not talking about people who are watching right now, I'm talking about people that we have never talked to before, I'm hoping that what they see first, before we get a chance to talk about it, that what they see is a church body who is committed to seeking unity. That would be my hope. Yeah, the worship team is going to come up, and we're going to finish with one more song. And my invitation to you during that time is to make this your prayer. To make it your prayer that I will seek to be unified, that, you know, like my brothers and I, as we argue over sports, we realize that ultimately that our love for one another and our care for one another trumps whatever we believe about sports. But it also means that it trumps what we believe about politics. You know, there are people in here who are going to be pro-Trump, and there are people in here who are going to be pro-Biden. And over the next, how many months do we have left until we get to the election? Like, oftentimes I just like to have a countdown so that we can get past that time. But as we get closer to that time, discussions may get a little bit more passionate. There are, in culture, what I don't want to see is accusations thrown within the church. Well, if you vote for Trump, then you're this, 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 and this. How can you be a Christian? And if you vote for Biden, then you're this, this, and this. How can you call yourself a Christian? If you're unwilling to come back to the building, then you must be full of fear. How can you call yourself a Christian? If you're back in the building, how can you call yourself a Christian when you don't care about people enough to keep them safe? If you don't support the Black Lives Matter movement, then you are obviously racist. How can you call yourself a Christian? If you support the Black Lives Matter movement, then you obviously don't care about the foundations of our country. How can you call yourself a Christian? All these different accusations that we throw back and forth at one another. Instead of stopping and understanding that all of those disagreements that we have should not trump our desire for unity. Because that was Jesus' prayer for us. And that really, even as you want to lob that accusation at somebody else, I remember a pretty smart guy in the Bible who said something along the lines of, be careful as you try to get that speck out of somebody else's eye, as you've got a big old log in your own eye. Because the truth is, it's easy to pick on that one thing you disagree on and forget that we're all walking around sinning. And we are covered by the grace of God in the midst of that. And that there is the possibility that the thing that you think that they are so wrong about, that you are actually the one walking around wrong. And would you want them to cancel you because you were wrong? I am a church member, so I will seek unity. God, thank you. Thank you for saying that prayer for us. As you and the Father are one, God, as believers in this thing that we call the Trinity, we understand that when you say that as you and the Father and the Holy Spirit are one, we understand a little bit more just how significant that is. You are of one mind. God, I pray that we would be of one mind. God, I pray that as we have our disagreements, because we will have our disagreements, there is no question about it, I pray that we would work through it in a way that would be guided by you. And to, you know, as we call you Father, I pray that we would work through them in a way that would make our Father proud. That we would seek to be united. God, we pray this in your name. Amen.